Now, I think a lot of us are thinking a little bit about Muhammad Ali. I met him once. He gave me and autographed some of his boxing gloves, and I don't know what I did with them.
No.
I'm pretty sure, but I wasn't that cavalier with it. I'm pretty sure what I did was gave them to a charity that auctioned them off. In fact, I know I did that. So it's not like they're under the bed somewhere collecting dust, but he was always hamming it up. He was always sort of generous with his personality with people. At least that's the way I saw him later in life. The wiki on Muhammad Ali goes like this. Muhammad Ali, born Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr., January 17, 1942, was an American professional boxer, generally regarded as the most significant heavyweight in the history of the sport. Early in his career, Ali was known for being an inspiring, controversial, and polarizing figure both inside and outside the ring. He is one of the most recognized sports figures of the past 100 years, crowned Sportsman of the Century by Sports Illustrated. Ali originally was known as Cassius Clay, began training at the age of 12. At the age of 22, he won the World Heavyweight Championship from Sonny Liston in a stunning upset in 1964. Shortly after that, Ali joined the Nation of Islam and changed his name. He converted to Sunni Islam in 1975 and then to Sufism in 2005. In 1967, 3 years after winning the heavyweight title, Ali refused to be conscripted into the U.S. military, citing his religious beliefs and opposition to American involvement in the Vietnam War. He was eventually arrested and found guilty on draft evasion charges and stripped of his boxing title. He did not fight again for nearly 4 years, losing a time of peak performance in an athlete's career. Ali's appeal worked its way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, and in 1971, his conviction was overturned. Only three-time world heavyweight champion, 64, 74, and 78, he won the belt again. Nicknamed the greatest, he was involved in several historic boxing matches. Notable among these were the first Liston fight, the three with rival Joe Frazier, and the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman. In the words of writer Joyce Carol Oates, he was one of the few athletes in any sport to, quote, define the terms of his public reputation. He had a sister and four brothers. His father painted billboards and signs. His mother, Odessa, was a household domestic. He was first directed toward boxing by Louisville police officer and boxing coach Joe E. Martin, who encountered the 12-year-old fuming over a thief taking his bicycle. He told the officer he was going to whoop the thief. The officer told him he'd better learn how to box first. His amateur record was 100 wins and 5 losses. Ali claimed in his 1975 autobiography that shortly after his return from the Rome Olympics, he threw his gold medal into the Ohio River after he and a friend were refused service at a whites-only restaurant and fought with a white gang. The story has since been disputed, and several of Ali's friends, including Bundini Brown and photographer Howard Bingham, have denied it. Brown told Sports Illustrated writer Mark Cram, "Honkies sure bought that one." Ali received a replacement medal at a basketball intermission during the 1996 games in Atlanta. He lit the torch to start the games there. We all recall that image of him shaking. By late 1963, he had become the top contender for Sonny Liston's title. Clay was a 7-1 underdog. Remember, he's 22 years old going into this fight. Despite this, Clay taunted Liston during the pre-game fight, the pre-fight buildup, dubbing him the Big Ugly Bear. "Liston even smells like a bear," Clay said. "After I beat him, I'm going to donate him to the zoo." The outcome of the fight was a major upset. Ali was diagnosed with Parkinson's syndrome in 1984, a disease that commonly results from head trauma from activities such as boxing. He remained active during the time, however, participating as a guest referee at WrestleMania. He was married 4 times. His daughter became a professional boxer in 1999. She was terrific in the ring. Married 4 times and had 7 daughters and 2 sons. We found a clip that I've also posted on my Facebook page. You can like me there. I'm WGN John Williams on Facebook. And here's part of an interview he did, and he looks so good. He's young. He's brash, but he's also thoughtful. He's visiting with a British interviewer on TV. We posted this clip on my Facebook page.
Things are getting much better, but I always wondered when I went to church on Sundays. I've always been one to, I'm not just a boxer. I do a lot of reading, a lot of studying. I ask questions. I travel these countries. I watch how their people live, and I learn. And I always ask my mother, I said, Mother, how come is everything white? I said, why is Jesus white with blonde hair and blue eyes? Why is the Lord's Supper all white men? Angels are white, Pope, and Mary, and even the angels. I said, Mother, when we die, do we go to heaven? She said, naturally, we go to heaven. I said, well, what happened to all the black angels they took the pictures? I said, oh, I know. If the white folks was in heaven, too, then the black angels were in the kitchen preparing the milk and honey. I said, listen, you quit saying that. Well, I was always curious. And I always wondered why I had to die to go to heaven. Why I couldn't have pretty cars and good money and nice homes now. Why do I have to wait till I die to get milk and honey? And I said, Mama, I don't want no milk and honey. I like steaks and I said, milk and honey is a laxative anyway. They have a lot of bathrooms in heaven. So anyway, I was always curious. I always wondered why. You know, Tarzan is the king of the jungle in Africa. He was white. I saw this white man swinging around Africa with a diaper on, hollering, oh, you all see Tarzan over here,
right.
Tarzan? And all the Africans, so he's beating them up and breaking the lion's jaw. And here's Tarzan talking to the animals, and the Africans been there for centuries, and he can't talk to the animals. Only Tarzan can talk to the animals. I always wonder why Miss America was always white. All the beautiful brown women in America, beautiful suntans, beauty shapes, all tight complexions, but she always was white. And Miss World was always white. And Miss Universe was always white. And then they got some stuff called White House cigars, white swan soap, king white soap, white cloud tissue paper, white rain hair rinse, white tornado flow wax. Everything was white. And the angel food cake was the white cake, and the devil food cake was the chocolate cake. I said, Mama, why is everything white? I always wondered, you know, and the president lived in the White House. And Mary had a little lamb, his feet as white as snow, and snow white. And everything was white. Santa Claus was white. And everything bad was black. The little ugly duckling was a black duck, and the black cat was the bad luck. And if I threaten you, I'm gonna blackmail you. I said, Mama, why don't they call it white male? They lie too. I was always curious, and then this is when I knew something was wrong. When the Olympic gold medal in Rome met me, Olympic champion, the Russian standing right here, and the Pole right here. Is Poland considered a communist country?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm defeating America's so-called threats or enemies. And the flag is going, ton, 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 ton. I'm standing so proud. Ton, 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 ton. And I done whooped the world for America. Ton, 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 ton. I took my gold medal, thought I'd invented something. I said, man, I know I'm going to get my people freedom there. I'm the champion of the whole world, Olympic champion. I know I can eat downtown now. And I went downtown that day, had my big old medal on, and went in the restaurants. At that time, black things weren't integrated. The black folks couldn't eat downtown. And I went downtown, and I sat down, and I said, a cup of coffee, a hot dog. The lady said, we don't serve Negroes. I'm so mad. I said, I don't eat them either. Just give me a cup of hot dog.
Pretty good stuff. It goes for a few minutes more. You get the idea. And if you want to watch that, it's just a beautiful interview. And, of course, he's on his game in this thing. Like me on Facebook, I'm King John there. This is John Williams, and you're listening to WGN. One last soundbite from Muhammad Ali coming up in just a minute. Then the Mincing Rascals in the next half hour. We'll play that back, as we always do on Saturdays on WGN. I'm John Williams. One of the things that Steve Bertrand said in our Mincing Rascals podcast that did not make the broadcast cut for today is when we were recording the podcast yesterday, we had just heard that Muhammad Ali was ill. This was on Friday. It was early, and he had not yet passed away. At least we weren't aware of it at the time. So we're sitting there talking about it, and Steve Bertrand said, as he has before, Steve's always kind of been one to say, why do we only talk about fondly people after they passed away. If we know they're ill or for some other reason we want to carve out some time, we should do that to speak highly of people that we favor. And so we should be doing that about Muhammad Ali. And then he mentioned something that you've probably heard from on WGN in the last several hours, and that is an excerpt that Muhammad Ali did with R. Roy Leonard. In fact, that was Steve's recommendation at the end of the podcast. We always close with a recommendation. In fact, I think there's a link on the landing page for the podcast to that interview. But anyway, Steve just said, I think we should just talk a little bit about or appreciate what a great guy Muhammad Ali was. Make sure you listen to that interview with Roy Leonard. And then moments later, Muhammad Ali passed away. So thank you, Steve, for that forward thinking. And we'll get to one more sound bite.
What's going to happen when you meet Smoking Joe? And I said, Joe's going to come out smoking, and I ain't going to be joking. I'll be pecking and a poking, pouring water on his smoking. Then this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier. Some people say, you better watch Joe Frazier. He's awful strong. I said, tell him to try a band roll on. That's deodorant.
Yeah, we got to play something like that if we're going to remember at all Muhammad Ali. By the way, the Mincing Rascals will be talking a little politics. We did not include the sound bites in the Mincing Rascals podcast or broadcast, but I just wanted to play a couple of excerpts. It was very interesting. The day that the NBA championship series started was also the day that in California, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were vying for the attention of that state and the country, and they both had really impressive speeches. Hillary finally said, okay, I'm going to start saying the stuff that we might have my surrogate say. I'm just going to start to say it. And some of her fans were happy about that. And then Donald Trump afterwards in San Jose, she spoke in San Diego, he then came back at her as only Trump can. I actually played some of these excerpts on another radio show that I do in Minneapolis, and I think some of the listeners felt that each of them won. You know, the Hillary fans thought Hillary did right and won the day, and others think that Donald Trump, being Donald Trump, wins the day. If you didn't hear it, it sounded a little bit like this.
Donald Trump's ideas aren't just different. They are dangerously incoherent. They're not even really ideas, just a series of bizarre rants, personal feuds, and outright lies.
You know, the crowd is laughing a little bit there, but Hillary didn't smile. She wasn't playing this thing for laughs. Some of it is just so outrageous. I think supporters were laughing, and also they were so happy to hear her saying it. But Hillary wasn't yucking it up, and Donald Trump wasn't either.
That we're not going to have people making deals like the Iran deal, like the Sergeant Bergdahl deal.
Trump was angry. Remember, he spoke after she did. So now he's referencing all of the sins of the Clintons.
He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit.
And that kind of speech is just about as pointed as Hillary got, but she just point by point laid out all of his faults. And you know that bugs Donald Trump.
The days of the Iran deal where they get $150 billion, we get nothing in that deal, nothing. And then I watch Hillary Clinton, and now she's proud of it. But she's only proud of it for one reason, because Obama wants it. Anything Obama wants, she's going forward with, because you know why? She doesn't want to go to jail. That's why, folks.
This is not someone who should ever have the nuclear codes. Because it's not hard to imagine Donald Trump leading us into a war just because somebody got under his very thin skin.
The only reason she's behaving like this, believe me, is she doesn't want to go to jail over the emails, okay? That's the only reason.
I don't know if this is an example of her engaging in Trump. I've been saying all along that I want Hillary to run her campaign and Trump to want, you know, run his. I don't want her or Bernie, for that matter, to engage Donald Trump at Donald Trump's level. They're not as good at that game. They won't win that game. And none of us would be able to stand that game. So I thought maybe the better posture for Hillary Clinton would be statesmanlike, you know, do whatever it is you're doing. The media will call him out for all of his faults. You don't need to do that. Don't get in the trenches. Now, I'm not sure that this is exactly her getting in the trenches. Maybe it is. It is as much as maybe she will. But there's definitely a different tone to what Hillary is doing here. Maybe tone's not the right word because her tone was measured. I thought it was even. But the fact that she's now firing these sorts of broadsides at him, very specifically talking about his failings, was new. And not that Trump can't take the punch, but boy, did he come punching back. Each of them, towards the end of their speeches, gave sort of, I think, a summary statement of who they are or where they're going.
If you really believe America is weak with our military, our values, our capabilities that no other country comes close to matching, then you don't know America.
Okay, that's Hillary Clinton's take on it.
If we win California, the election is over, folks. It's over. We win. And then we will make America great again, believe me.
Yeah, so that's Donald Trump's signature line. We'll make America great again. And he's telling them not just to win the primary, of course, but if they can in the general election win California, and he was telling them he thinks he can, then he will be the next president of the United States. The Rascals talked a little bit about that. They talked about his sort of defense of his giving money to veterans. The Rascals talked about the fights going on in Springfield, and they talked about whether or not the L should be spelled E-L or with the capital letter L. Oh, and they also talked about lowercase T-R-O-N-C. All of that coming up after the news on WGN. Okay, thank you, Bob. We recorded our podcast. We call it The Mincing Rascals, a roundtable of news and current events in Chicago and Illinois and on the national scene. That's posted now. You can find it at WGNplus.com on my Facebook page. You can subscribe to it. I hope you get it that way as well. Here is our broadcast version of The Mincing Rascals featuring...
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And I'm Eric Zorn, legendary columnist for the Chicago Tribune.
Trunk.
Trunk
for Trunk.
I was about to say, so none of you build yourselves as Trunksters, T-R-O-N-C, all small letters, in kind of a Mary Tyler Moore palette. Trunk is now the new name of the corporation that owns the Chicago Tribune. Am I right about that?
Yes, and we are to be, the memo to the staff says we are to be curating content and creating content and monetizing.
Yeah, I read that email or memo to the staff, and I didn't know exactly what it meant. Trunk, T-R-O-N-C, all small letters for some reason, stands for Tribune Online Content. Is that right?
Can I say that online you guys are still using or capitalizing Trunk? Because I read a story on it today in the business section.
Heads will roll, Steve.
Yeah. Big news.
It's kind of, I just saw a description of the word Trunk.
There's some good things on Twitter about it. Someone says Trunk, things that Trunk sounds like more than a media company. One is a strain of marijuana. Two is part of a steam engine, and three is a 17th century musical instrument. I think it would air on my trunk.
Sounds like a caveman to me for some reason.
So the name has changed. Do you guys have any expectation as to what that means to the newspaper?
No. Expectation is probably the wrong word.
How about we focus on good journalism, content, getting more readers, just the idea that our marketing, we have a marketing arm that, you know, spent all this time probably rolling out this product that I think it's changed on the NASDAQ, right? It's
TRNC. Yeah, you've gone from the NYSE to the NASDAQ, and your symbol is TRNC. Capital letters there, by the way. So you got that going for you.
Someone else says it sounds like the latest Palin family pregnancy.
Let's talk about Hillary Clinton's speech today. A couple of days ago in San Diego, I think it's the first shot across the bow of the SS Donald Trump. I mean, she's been playing patty cake with Trump and every now and then saying things like he's not qualified. But now she just delivered. She said he's dangerously incoherent. She said his are not even ideas. They're just a bizarre series of rants and lies. He's not just unprepared, she said. He's temperamentally unfit for the job. She said this man should not have the nuclear codes. He'd lead us to war just because someone got under his very thin skin. And she went on like that.
It reminded me of the Mitt Romney speech when Romney kind of laid out all of the various shortcomings of Donald Trump. I mean, she really nailed him a couple of times, saying that, you know, ask him about foreign policy. His experience is based on his term overseeing the Miss Universe pageant. And, you know, he spouts out on Twitter. He's probably doing it right now. And in fact, he was. So I thought it was pretty effective at courting those people who are in the middle and unsure. if she keeps hammering this theme home, I think he's going to have a lot of trouble.
Hillary Clinton had not been that strong yet about Trump. And, you know, all those quotes you said were quite true, John. And I also thought that she was raising what's going to be a really important question on the minds of voters, which is like, if you know, your neighbors, your sons, your daughters, do you want them marching off to war because this guy is so thin-skinned that he gets angry at something that someone says or does on the international scene?
I thought one of the most effective things was the tone of it. And I don't have a good, I'm interested in how you guys would describe the tone. I don't have a good word for it, but it wasn't accusatory. It wasn't really patronizing. It was sort of, it wasn't bland by any means.
It
but
was
she,
measured.
Measured? Okay, yeah.
Trunk.
It was
Eric, it was, you have to stop that now.
Let's see if we can drop it in the podcast like 10 prunk, times. All right.
That's, prunk.
I think we're up to five.
That is, that measured is maybe a good word because, you know, it was, that's a good word. It was because it was very effective just by stating the facts of it all, I guess.
And this is what baffles me. This is the time for Donald Trump to have changed his tone and his direction to try to win this general election, to answer a serious political attack like that with a serious political defense of his own and perhaps followed by an attack. He tweeted, he says, reading poorly from the teleprompter, she doesn't even look presidential. Crooked Hillary no longer has credibility. Too much failure in office. That's not a response.
Donald Trump this week also defended his donations to veterans. He made $5.6 million, or money he raised to the tune of $5.6 million, was given to veterans groups. And then he listed them all out, and he said, look, I'm the only guy in history who's been criticized for raising money and giving it to veterans. What was your reaction to his defense of that, guys?
I mean, he gave the money out after he was called on the carpet by the Washington Post. So, I mean, do I think sometimes the coverage of him is over the top? Yes. But it was a very legitimate story to say, hey, you know what? Let's check back. Totally legit for reporters to want to track, you know, what actually happened to that money.
He's completely detached from reality, this man. I mean, he truly is. He's holding this news conference and he's saying, well, I wanted this money to go privately. You know, this is a private thing. You don't need to know. This doesn't have to be revealed. It was the most public of all things. I mean, he skips this Megyn Kelly debate, says I'm going to raise millions. He made it public. And then he questions the fact that as a guy running for president.
And he was tweeting about
it. So he's politicizing it himself, advancing his own aims himself, and then bristles when he's expected to make an accounting for the money.
And the answer to that is not a news conference where you call reporters' names.
No.
The answer is a press release with a spreadsheet saying, here's our donations. Next question, please.
Right.
But did anybody think that he wasn't going to give it? I mean, at the end of the day, Donald Trump raised money for veterans and gave it
yes.
to veterans.
Yeah, I don't think he would have given it if they hadn't, as Kristen pointed out, they called him on it.
Very cynical.
They
Eric.
Did that story. He raised that debate was what, January?
You don't think it wasn't going to come up?
No.
No, that's different, John. Are you saying, but without pressure, would he have given that money? And I don't think he was holding on to it to use the money elsewhere. I don't think it mattered to him. He got what he got out of the fundraiser. He got his politics out of it. It was out of his mind. So, yeah, I don't think there was any vetting, as he said, to find the right sort of charities to give the money to.
And I almost don't blame him, you know, the candidate. But this is something that obviously your campaign should be careful about who you're giving money to. A lot of these veterans groups are dishonest. You can go to the charity websites and see that for yourself and how much they spend on administration. So, I mean, there could be some truth to the fact that they wanted to make sure the money was going to, would actually trickle down to vets.
Well, I thought the media was showing its colors a little bit on that one, though, because the man raised money, gave it to veterans, didn't give it as timely as maybe some of us would have liked him to. So there was motivation for him now after the Washington Post story.
You're giving him a complete pass, John.
What's wrong with asking him the question? I mean, it wasn't like they were camped out in front of his house.
He says he's going to spend $6 million, raise $6 million. He doesn't allocate the money. The Washington Post runs a story saying he hadn't allocated the money. The next day, he allocates the money and then has a news conference ripping reporters for snooping into his business.
Do you think there has been equal time or attention given to the Clinton Foundation? And I'm just throwing this out there, but I could see where, you know, this is some money that he raised for veterans groups. You have, you know, not conservative publications, liberal publications over the past year, tracking all this money that went back and forth between that were donations from countries like Algeria giving to the Clinton Foundation, and then the State Department approving larger than normal arms sales. Again, Dave Serrata, a Democratic consultant, reporter, writer now for, wrote this in Salon. So I'm not quoting National Review or something here. But do you think there is a legitimate question on the Trump side that kind of story on Hillary Clinton does not get the same amount of attention?
Yeah, I'll say yes.
I think so, too. It did get a lot of play early on. I'm trying to remember.
Wait a minute.
Was that
ago
in the Democratic primaries, or where was that getting its play at?
Well, see, you're proving my point.
The Trump thing is so much easier to understand.
Easier to digest.
Yeah, right.
Money,
but
not money,
far less
problem.
Serious, far less serious than what has been alleged about her.
Let's talk briefly about the most important issue of the day, and that is the elevated subway in Chicago. Steve, how do you print or write that?
It's the L-E-L. Who do those people think they are?
Yeah.
Who do those people think they are, John?
The CTA spells it. I mean, and I agree with Steve, and I guess Kristen is saying, yeah, the EL is the way I've always thought of it, and that's the way I would spell it. But the CTA spells it just L in inside quotes.
And
a
the
capital.
New AP style book Trump. Says it'll be capital. At least it could be a little L.
So the AP style book comes out, and they say refer to it as
L.
Not E-L.
We're ignoring that, I
correct.
Hope, in the newsroom.
It's short for elevated train, right?
Right.
So L is not L, E-L, elevated
train, come on,
train,
Eric,
right?
Give it the times. It's snappy. You get it, L. It's like an emoji.
It's a disco typeface.
Eric, being in radio, I only read the first two lines of every sentence, so I did not know that the CTA spells it and refers to it as just the L.
Yes.
So that gives the AP a little cover.
See, this is the sort of depth that I can add. As a content aggregator for Trunk.
You got to monetize that somehow.
We're going to get in trouble.
It's amazing to me that the Associated Press can, and who are these? Is it a local committee coming up with this? I don't think so.
I don't know. That's a good question.
That they can take the way
who are these
a
deciders?
Region refers to something and change it. Now, again, if the CTA calls it the L, I guess I get it, but
it's like a company coming in and changing the name of a company under the noses of the
Kristen
people who work there.
Right.
Can't be done.
It'd be like adding Velveeta to a Philly steak or something. I mean, you can't just change what a region does.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Eric Zorin. Thank you, Kristen McQuarrie. That's our Mincing Rascals podcast. If you're in front of a browser, just go to WGNplus.com. You can download it on iTunes. We always post it on our various Facebook pages. I'm King John from WGN Radio on Facebook. By the way, there's another podcast that's coming out of the building, and there are a few. The latest is called Harmonicast, and it features our Bob Kessler. I know you're busy doing the news over there, Bob. You got a second to plug
I do.
Your podcast?
Guess what it's about, Harmonicast. What could that possibly be about?
Well, I know you're a good harmonica player.
Yes. Well, thank you.
So is that
that's
so
what
how
it
do
is.
You make a podcast out of harmonica stuff?
It's basically one-on-one interviews with other players.
Yeah.
And so the original idea was to talk to, as guests, harmonica players, and the audience is harp players. But I would like to think that it can transcend that limitation. I think the conversations are interesting whether you play the harmonica or not, I think. Because, well, this latest one I put up was Peter Hope Evans. You probably don't know who that is by name, but he played for many years with Peter Townsend of The Who, and they're good friends. And he is a delightful guy. He's one of my absolute musical heroes.
Hmm.
And he talks and giggles at the same time. He's kind of wacky, but he's delightful. He's all about joy and wisdom. So that's what I took away from that conversation. So that is the latest one, Peter Hope Evans.
So that's
with more to come.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You're right. I don't think it matters sometimes specifically what the topic is, if it's informed and you know, passionate and fun conversation. Think of all of the things that are out there now as podcasts or as conversations. There's a podcast out there dedicated to the interior spaces of airports. And they talk about that, literally the decor. I mean, I talk to Thomas Jefferson sometimes, for crying out loud. I think what makes a podcast go, don't you? Like any conversation, Bob, is do these people know what they're talking about? Do they care about it? And then you get sucked in, right?
Yes, and that's what I would like to think mine can do. we don't really talk about, oh, well, you know, what's your bending technique here? What model harmonica do you play? A little bit of that. In fact, Peter, I tried to get him to go there, and he didn't even really want to go there.
Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, it's sort of that, but I would like to think it's beyond. It's a universal, you know, appreciation thing. So, yeah, it's been fun.
We good got for you.
Corky Siegel coming up, Howard Levy, who's those are both – I've done the interviews, but they'll be posted on WGN Plus.
Eventually, you'll have to get to, I guess, Stevie Wonder and Bruce Springsteen and anybody else.
I don't know. I guess Springsteen, I guess. Well, someone asked me, are you going to run out eventually? And I said, I hope not. But no, when you think about it, how you can go with it, you can. There are a lot of harp players that only other harmonica players really know about, and they have careers. But there are other people that, like Stevie Wonder, Bruce Springsteen, Neil Young, yeah, they're on the dream list. We'll get them.
We'll keep it up. So WGNplus.com and search for Harmonicast.
There you go.
Featuring our own Bob Kessler. Speaking of musicians, Adele was in the news this week. It was earlier in the week because I think it was based on a concert that she did last weekend. And she called somebody out in the stands. I want to play a clip from that and then ask you a question about it. You might want to call, too, 312-981-7200. Let me get to the clip after this on WGN.
God, it stopped raining. Yeah, I want to tell that lady as well, can you stop filming me with a video camera? Because I'm really here in real life. You can enjoy it in real life rather than through your camera. Can you take your tripod down? This is a DVD. This is a real show. And I'd really like you to enjoy my show because there's lots of people outside that couldn't come in.
Earlier in the week, you may have seen the video of Adele calling out a fan who was up front and was not only videotaping her or taping her, you know, video on their phone, but I'm pretty sure they actually had a tripod set up, that it was a more sophisticated setup, and somebody right up front there was taking video of Adele in concert. The great irony of this is everybody's cheering that Adele's calling out that person. Everybody's videotaping Adele calling out the person videotaping. And then they ran it on TV. And everybody on the TV morning shows this week was kind of smug. You know, that's right, these idiot people. Who are they to be doing this videotaping? We should be watching concerts, not looking at them through our phones. But then they're running the video. So they obviously value that too, that whole dialogue that took place on stage. And I'm not exactly sure I'm with Adele on this anyway. I'm not sure that she gets to decide how I experience her concert. If I want to look at it through my phone, which is ridiculous, but people do, then I think that's what I get for the price of admission. Am I right on this, you guys? Do you agree with me on this one? No? Yes? I mean, at least that's the way I see it. So the controversy has surfaced also on our Vibe Score app, and we'll be talking about that. But are you with me on this at all, Griff? I think Adele doesn't get to decide how I get to enjoy the concert. I'm in the crowd. I get to watch it.
I'm torn on it. I understand where she's coming from, but by calling out one person, it's like you said, everybody's doing it. Is she going to admonish? Is she going to start screaming at the whole crowd? If she did that, we'd think she was, you know, being kind of rude about it. But if it's one person and she kind of shames this one person, we like it. But I think it is dumb to have your, you know, just watch the show. So I'm torn on it. We got Bonnie on line one.
Okay. All right. Now, Bonnie, you jump in here too then. Bonnie, you're on WGN. Hi. What do you want to say?
Hi. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Look forward to it every Saturday. I'm siding on Adele. She does it in such a way. I don't know. If people with British accents, they in a sweet tone, they seem to be able to get away with more than if you know she starts swearing at them, or you know, I've heard other people call out people who are taping them, and but I think we have to let her be able to say that this is something that I don't approve of, and would you, you know, please put it away? I mean, to set up a tripod, it seems a bit,
that's harder to defend, isn't it? You know, the tripod thing makes it sound like they're going to repurpose that video. They are going to try and sell it, or
exactly. And I have tickets to see her if I can get down there safely without being shot at coming up.
Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm coming. I'm in Lake Villa. But I'm going down to the...
Where's she performing, United Center or at...
Where the United Center is. So I have to get there safely. I'm a little concerned about the safety issue. But I think that, you know, we're buying tickets to her concert. We should follow the rules.
Yeah, that's one more question I have. I'm going to put you on hold. Thank you for joining us. And travel safely. I think you'll be fine. But I don't know what it says on the back of the ticket. If it says no videotaping, then I guess you don't videotape. But if it doesn't say that, I'm not sure that it's Adele's business to tell you can't do that. John, jump in here real quick. I want to hear you out. What did you want to say?
In 1993, Axl Rose performed with Guns N' Roses in St. Louis, got mad at a fan just for taking a picture, and he caused a riot where he was going to come on stage 2 days later in Chicago at the Rosemont Horizon. They had warned, because it was a warrant out for arrest, if he steps on stage and performs, they were going to arrest him on the spot. They canceled the show because I had 4 tickets for that show. Now, if I may, most major venues in the Chicago area through Live Nation, Ticketmaster, Clear Channel, it states on the door that no photography or videotaping is allowed at the performances. Security should be the ones that would have to enforce that. Now, for this fan, because I used to do the same thing, too, with credentials. As long as credentials are exposed and they're available to tape at that time, the guy with the tripod just couldn't walk in there with the video camera and a tripod and start chafing her from the first row. He had to have access. And 9 out of 10 times, you can only video or take pictures of the first 3 songs. After that, you're done. They escort you out of that section before the stage.
I had no idea. I'm going to run. Yeah. Thanks for the call. And safe travels, everybody. Enjoy your music. We're going to pause for the news. Afterwards, we'll talk about best places for outdoor dining in Chicago. The Vibe Score will come your way. The boys from The Beat will, too, on WGN. By the way, Bob, a text poured in while you were doing the news from somebody who heard Bonnie a little while ago on the air talking about Adele. She's going to go to the concert at the United Center. She said she's nervous about her safety going there.
Yeah.
And the text came in and said, I get angry when people say that. Come on, you'll be fine. I don't think it's I think that's a fair comment for somebody to state. I understand why people who are going to the United Center, particularly a female, and especially if you were downstate, I don't think she was. But, I mean, you know, if you're not familiar or comfortable with the city and then you hear what's going on all of the time and then you're going to go to the west side, yeah, people get nervous about that. I think that's a completely legitimate feeling. She'll be fine. You know, you don't hear about anybody shooting up concerts. But if you are apprehensive about that, I think that's a very real fair emotion for people to have, and that's a problem the city has. That image matters. You know what I mean? And so I'm not rolling my eyes when somebody says, oh, gee, I'm worried about coming into Chicago. My friends in Minneapolis think that the bullets are just flying left and right all the time. And I tell them, no, it's not like that. And they go, well, read the paper. Look at these national stories. It sounds like it's the wild, wild west over there. More about that a little later on. Let's talk about outdoor dining in Chicago, shall we? On a phone line is Elizabeth Atkinson. She's the restaurants and bars editor at Time Out Chicago. Pardon me for my little tangent rant there, Elizabeth. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Are you safe? Are you okay right now?
I am safe. I'm at my apartment. It's a little rainy. I could deal without that, but that's okay.
Let's talk about now. You guys posted something, and actually it was in April, I think, and it was some of the best outdoor dining venues in the city, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, I just say one other thing, and then I'll let you get rolling. But I saw a national list, and it had greatest outdoor dining venues in America. And a lot of them were in Hawaii, California, Florida, you know, places along the coast, maybe sunshiny places like Arizona. There was only one in Chicago. All right, whatever. And then it was Homestead on the Roof, which I don't know about. You know about Homestead on the Roof?
I do know about Homestead on the Roof. It's a really, really great rooftop bar and restaurant out on the west side in Ukrainian Village. It's actually above Roots, which is one of the 50-50 restaurant groups, pizza bars. But they have a 1,000-square-foot garden, and the menu changes every day. It's beautiful. You get to go up there, and when you're sitting all of the food, or a lot of the food that they grow on the rooftop is actually incorporated into the menu.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah.
But that
so whatever
make
you're getting on the menu could be different.
Yeah, but that didn't make your list. Were you specifically saying these are the best? It wasn't, in your estimation, one of the very best in the city?
I think it's pretty good. So the way that we make our list depends on how many we can really get to before they go up. So I'm sure I'm always making adjustments for things that open up to try to keep the most up-to-date list as possible, but I hadn't gotten to Homestead on the Roof until fairly recently. So
got it. Well, let's talk about some of the ones you guys did like. Number one on your list was Parsons Chicken and Fish, right?
Yeah, I'm a sucker for fried chicken. Like, even if it's terrible chicken, fried chicken, I'm eating it. So, but Parsons, I think, does a really, really good job. Their fried chicken is phenomenal, and their patio is even more gorgeous. I was talking to a friend the other day, and she said, there's nothing that I don't like about this patio. Whenever we're sitting on it, it's just always perfect. And they always have a frozen cocktail that's rotating. I think this summer they'll be having Negronis, margaritas, dark and stormies, and other slushies moving through their menu, which is just perfect when it's a sunny day outside.
How do you balance it? Like, do you say, okay, the perfect patio, is it more about the patio, the venue, or is it more about the food? I mean, I know you'd like them to both be awesome, but is one more important to you than another?
I don't think so. I think it has to deal with the overall experience. We try to get to as many places as possible, but, you know, at the end of the day, when I'm going over all of the list of everywhere that I've been, I'm trying to think and ranking them. I'm thinking, is this one of the best experiences that I had? If this dish was really great at this place, like, that's a really, really good thing. But was the patio really nice, too? I think you have to balance the whole thing out.
I find myself sometimes ordering down. Like, I say, okay, the menu isn't great, but I'll find something safe on there if the venue's really nice, you know? So I'll be a little forgiving about unimaginative menus or, you know, the main dish isn't good. But I can always get a burger there, so I'll just go get a burger, but I really want to be outside. You know what I mean?
Yes, totally. I mean, if it's a gorgeous day outside, to me, the food doesn't always matter. I think it's, you know, of course, a great burger is always going to be a great burger, but I don't know. I'll eat anything. So as long as it's good or decent, I think a lot of menus have to be a little bit safe to please everyone, but yeah. I'm happy to try whatever.
So give me another one you guys like outdoors.
Another outdoors one, one of my favorites, it's a BYOB, is 90 Miles Cuban. It made it pretty close to the top, I think number four.
Yeah, it is.
I think they do a really, really good job with their Cuban food. One of my favorite dishes on their menu is their ropa vieja, and it's just really nice. You can always bring in whatever alcohol. I really like to bring in either a red wine or some tequila, and they'll mix up a margarita for you, or they'll mix up a sangria for you to just sit out on their porch and drink it with your meal. So
that's 90 Miles Cuban Cafe, and that's on Clybourne. What was the one I was reading in your piece? They have like AstroTurf ping pong tables. You said it looks like a CB2 showroom or something like that.
Ada Street. Yeah, it's Chef Zoe's Shore, and they do Yeah, I haven't been to this one. I've double-bylined this story, but I've heard really, really great things about it. It's a hybrid cocktail bar and restaurant, so they do a lot of, I know that they do a lot of interesting cocktails. I've looked at their menu a few times, and the menu changes quite regularly for them as well.
Yeah, here's the line. The adorable back patio is straight out of a CB2 catalog, complete with an AstroTurf lawn, ping pong tables, and a grill. If you have a ping pong table in your garden or rooftop or patio, I'm going to go there. That sounds like a lot of fun to me. And that's Ada Street, A-D-A-O Street. What's another one you like?
Another one that I am really into right now is, again, I'm going back to fried chicken, but Honey Butter Fried Chicken up in Avondale. I think that their fried chicken is always fantastic. The patio is just really lovely. It's got a lot of picnic-type tables with umbrellas over them, but it's always just really, really nice and fairly quiet up there, so you can always go and get just good fried chicken.
Are there places, I mean, some of these are in neighborhoods, obviously. Are there places downtown, maybe along the river? I don't know. Are there some places you like dining outdoors?
Yeah, one of my favorite rooftops downtown is Cindy's. I think it's just lovely, and it's you know, fairly recently opened, or I guess a year or so ago. But I think that the cocktails there are really great, and it looks right over Millennium Park. And every time I try to go, there's a line. So it seems that everyone else has been let into my secret. But it's got a great wine list. There's space indoors and outdoors. No games, but it is really nice. One with games, though, I really like Streeterville Social up in the new Lowe's Hotel. I forget what games they do. I'm not a huge games on patios person. I like to sit and drink, but but they have a lot of games out there, and the patio has AstroTurf, and it's really lovely as well.
You know, there's a couple places downtown that I haven't been to in a long time, but I remember going to. One was in the Trump Hotel, that, 13 or however high that patio deck is they have up there.
Yeah.
Really expensive, but, you know, you're going for the view, and it's pretty spectacular. The Conrad downtown has a real neat rooftop sort of patio that you'd never know if you're walking down the street, but it's really fun. And just one of the place I'd throw in, and I'm not exactly sure if this even qualifies for a list like yours, but if you're out by the planetarium on the museum campus, mm-hmm. there's some outdoor dining and drinking on some of those patios they have there, and you're looking back at the city. And on the afternoon, it's terrific, but in the evening too, you know, as the sun's starting to set, it's just a really great view. It's a real nice scene there.
Yeah, totally. I think that there's a lot of places that are opening up downtown, too, with either patios or rooftops, and with the Riverwalk opening back up again for the summer. I think downtown is becoming a place that you can definitely go and have a drink after work, or like you said, later in the evening when the lights start coming on and you can look over the river and see the reflection and just kind of like bask in the beauty that downtown really is.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's really nice.
Give me another one back in the neighborhoods maybe that you like. We're talking
back in the neighborhoods
with Elizabeth Atkinson. She's the restaurants and bars editor at Time Out Chicago. In April, they had their best outdoor dining piece. We saw it and just thought, well, let's check in and grab a couple of these. Give me one more you like.
I'll talk about one more, the one that I really like that I just went to, and it's not on the list, but I just recently made it out there, is to the Promontory in Hyde Park. It's got a double patio, which is really, really nice, and it's got an open wood-fired grill in the restaurant. So the Promontory doubles as a music venue at night, but during the early evening, they do dinner, and the food is just lovely, and the cocktails are phenomenal, and there's a great wine list, and it's very family-friendly. The last time I was there were so many families there with their kids, and all of the kids were experimenting and trying out all of the food, which I thought was really interesting because the menu is a little adventurous for some people, but it's really great.
Elizabeth, this is helpful. All right, I'm hungry now, and I'm also thirsty now,
yeah.
Thanks to you. So we'll let folks
get
out and enjoy it. Elizabeth Atkinson, the restaurants and bars editor at Time Out Chicago. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, John.
Have a good day. It's 2:21, and this is WGN. Garbine Muguruza upset Serena Williams for the women's title at the French Open out of Paris. I'll get back to this story in just a minute. Even when you can't be there, they are. It's the Chicago Tribune Sports Plus with more coverage from journalists than anywhere else in the city. Join now at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. Yes, Spaniard crowned champion, and it wasn't Rafi Nadal at the French Open. Garbiñ Muguruza, I think I'm saying that right, upset Serena Williams 7-5, 6-4 on Saturday to win the first Grand Slam of her career while also depriving the American of tying Steffi Graf's Open era record of 22 majors. Weird to think that anybody could beat Serena Williams, and in straight sets, no less, 7-5 and 6-4 in Paris. Yeah, I was thinking about tennis players a little bit today because, and here was my thought process on it, I was thinking how much we came to know, love, and respect Muhammad Ali. But when you go back and watch the original, you know, the early videos of him where he's this young, brash, 22-year-old heavyweight champion of the world, and where he's saying all these outrageous things, and where he's making fun of people, and where he changes his religion to Islam and changes his name and won't fight in the Vietnam War, et cetera, et cetera. People didn't like him. I mean, a lot of people didn't like him. His persona was much different back then. But then the times change. He didn't that much. Maybe he did a little bit. But, I mean, it's just interesting to me how some people can be so controversial and in some ways like that so unpopular, right? And then we come around to embrace them, especially later in their life. Jimmy Connors, and it's a lot of tennis players are that way. Andre Agassi, certainly John McEnroe, right? You think of some of your favorite tennis players, especially in that era, and they were white hot, and they were angry, and they were vain and profane, you know? And then I love John McEnroe now. He's great in the booth. His brother is too. And Jimmy Connors is one of my heroes. What passion he had, right? But back then, people hated Jimmy Connors, that punk. And tennis, I was thinking, so what's a list like that of people whose emergence on the scene was first not greeted with open arms, but then we really came to embrace them?
Well, I was thinking about, before you even brought this up, thinking about when, after Prince died, just now with Muhammad Ali dying, and I remember somebody mentioning, was there anybody who acted like their stuff didn't stink more than Prince? And had the, you know, and had the chops to back it up.
When that's true about all of those ones I mentioned too.
Oh yeah, totally. And I think people love that when someone knows that they're great and they are great. If you don't think they're great, then you might have a big problem. But with Muhammad Ali, I think people just really gravitate towards somebody like that. And there's something really special about it.
Yeah, really. Well, the story goes nowhere if he doesn't deliver. But then at 22, he knocks out Sonny Liston or beats Sonny Liston and then goes on and on and on. So, yeah, you've got to have the chops, too. By the way, just speaking to Prince, so his death report came out this week. And people, I don't know if you were following this online at all. He died from an overdose of an opiate. But they reported his height and weight just kind of perfunctory in this real non-revealing form. You know, it had that he was an African-American, that he died on a certain date at time, and they had his height and weight. They listed him at 5'1", 112 pounds. People were shocked at his weight. I wasn't shocked at his weight. I was surprised he was that small. Find somebody who's 5'1". That's how tall Prince was. He was 5'5 with his shoes, right? But yeah. It's kind of to your point, Griffin. And I thought, wow, if I was 5'1", 112 pounds with wispy hair like him, I don't know that I would feel so confident that I would, even if I was that talented, have that much charisma on stage, because I think I'm a guy and I'm small. And nobody had more sex appeal. Nobody had more confidence on a stage than Prince. You know?
Yeah, and I think we do value or expect a lot of celebrities in this day and age. You don't feel the same way, but a lot of people expect celebrities to have a certain amount of humbleness and or, you know, something like that. And I understand that, but I do think when you get these kinds of people, they're just electrifying. Why would you want to stifle it?
Oh, yeah, really. I mean, yeah, humility's great, especially for those of us who don't have that kind of talent. You need to back it off a little bit. That's one of the charms to me of NFL and NBA players. They make us furious, right, with maybe their end zone dances or their cocky attitude or the things they say, and it's all about me. But I think that's the package. That's just what you get when you get supremely talented people that have to be very confident to do what you ask them to do. And then later in their career, Randy Moss is now going to be in the broadcast booth. Imagine that. You're actually not even going to watch him play. You're just going to listen to that guy. So we do come around to the news. That's next on WGN. That I woke up feeling this way. What are we listening to here, Griff?
So that's Meghan Trainor.
I love Meghan Trainor.
She did the song All About That Bass that was a huge hit a couple years ago.
Sure.
New one called Me Too. I knew you would like it.
Is that why we're vibing on this one?
No, I think she released it just recently, and I think she's positioning it as maybe a song of the summer as the summer begins.
Yeah.
Do you think it will be the song of the summer? Do you think it's deserving of that kind of title? What's your score?
I was actually thinking about this. No, that JT song is still my song of the summer. It has not unseated that. Uh-huh. So if I had to score that against him, I would give it a low score.
Well, yeah, but that's not what we're doing. What? Give it just a general.
All right. That song. Oh, okay. I can do that.
Yeah.
Is this how Vibe Score works?
I know.
I invented it.
1 to 100. What's your score for that song?
I give it 83.
Okay. I'm low. I'd probably go 30. I'm not
really
not a fan of hers, no.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah.
I think you're tainted. This happens a lot. People get a bad taste in their mouth for somebody or something, and then they come out with a new movie or another season or another song, and they don't give it the love it deserves.
That's the case for every single time somebody disagrees with you. That's the problem.
That is so true.
That's what's going on when you don't agree.
I've got to stop being that way.
Bob in the newsroom is going to play along, I think. Bob, what do you think of this?
I'll play along.
Yeah.
So let him hear the song. Let me hear that song again, Griff. I'll turn this down. Can you give us a little more of that song one more time before?
I go straight to VIP. Drinks, my entourage behind me. My life's a movie, Tom Cruise. So bless me, baby, achoo. And even if they try to, they can't do it like I do. I thank God every day.
God. Hey, Bob, isn't that a terrific song?
It's not for me. I recognize that, yeah,
oh,
in the same way that maybe a sweater is a nice sweater that I would never wear. But it's a nice sweater. I mean, I get it. I really do. But I would not... I wouldn't put it on.
1 to 100, then.
One
what
to a hundred. Sure, I'll go with an 82, just because it's a great Meghan Trainor song. I mean, it's good at doing what she does. I just don't get into it myself.
So
I understand why people like it. I really do.
Well, no, it's your own personal taste,
yeah,
Bob.
Oh, my own personal taste. I don't like it at all.
Well, then rescore it, my friend.
Rescore. I give it a 40 something, I guess.
All right,
it's not for me. She didn't write it with a 44-year-old man in mind, I don't think.
No, but that's okay. I think the beauty of Vibe Score is you give it your own score. We'll see how they do in that mass. And so,
you know, it's getting an 86.
I think it should. I'm right in that wheelhouse.
There you go. Okay, in the Chicago category, can we move on?
Yeah, sure.
In the Chicago category, Yoko Ono's plans for an art piece called Sky Landing were revealed last week. The piece may go up at Jackson Park sometime in the near future. So there's a little picture of what the plans might look like on the story that we posted, and we wanted you to tell us what you think of that plan.
I saw the picture of it. That's what we're scoring, right, Griff?
I guess so, yeah, but you can't really tell what's going to...
Well, they do have a rendition of at least what one of the works of art looked like. And I thought it looked pretty awesome. I gave it a high score. I was in the upper 80s on this one, as I recall. I like public art or outdoor art like that, big pieces like that. And this thing looked like it had some sails. I mean, maybe it was made out of metal or is going to be, but I just thought it was a pretty cool thing. And I was divorcing myself of my bias against the nuttiness, I think, is Yoko Ono, and just admiring it on its own. And I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I give it a 75. A lot of people went low, so it's balanced out at a 56 right now.
By the way, Kristen Decker, our friend and sometimes producer and assistant on Vibe Score, gave the Meghan Trainor song a 50. So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Okay.
I don't know what to take from that. She's feeling very moderate about it.
I know. I almost think we shouldn't allow 50s, Deck. You got to go 49 or 51. Okay, give me another one, Griff.
Okay, in news and current events, I can't believe we made it the whole show without mentioning an endangered 17-year-old gorilla who was killed at the Cincinnati Zoo after a 4-year-old boy fell into the gorilla habitat. Was this the right decision?
I think, of course, it's the right decision. I can't believe it's only getting an 80. I mean, it's a human life there. It's a little kid. He's not the problem here. The problem is the zoo and the mom. It's not that kid. You can't risk his life. So, God, you hate to shoot an endangered gorilla like that, but I think they had no choice. Even Donald Trump said that this week.
Yeah.
At the press conference about the veterans, he kept batting back all their questions, and then one of them just goes, "What'd you think of the gorilla?" So that's an easy one for me. Where are you on that one, guys?
Bob?
You know, I'm with you, John, that it's the zoo and the mom. So the decision was unfortunate, but it's one that had to be made the way it was. But, the series of events that led to it were the problem, not the event itself.
Well, amen to that. And, you know, not that this is that important, but if you had to sort of prioritize responsibility or fault here, I found myself getting angrier at the zoo than I was at the mom. There's nutty moms out there. There's good moms out there who sometimes let their kids get away. You can't let that happen if you're the zoo where that kid can get in with a gorilla. That has to be impossible. It wasn't impossible at all. So I was angrier at the zoo in a way.
Yeah, you said you were tempted. You wished that 50s weren't possible. I was almost tempted to just go 50 because I don't know anything about zoos. Everybody is all of a sudden a zoo expert. I don't know what actually happened there.
That got tiresome.
Or what? Yeah. But I did give it like an 85 because it seems to me that you have to prioritize a human life, of course. So, yeah, it's getting an 80 like you said.
Where do we go next?
In sports, the Warriors beat the Cavs in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. They play Game 2 at Golden State tomorrow. Who do you think will win the series? So 100 is the Warriors, 0 is the Cavs. What would you score there?
And people were able to score on this, obviously, before Game 1 started. Now you got a little bias or, you know, sort of sneak peek at how this is shaken out. Man, it's the Golden State Warriors. The Splash Brothers don't even have to do all the scoring, and they still beat Cleveland by 20 points, for crying out loud. That's just unbelievable. That team's unbelievable.
I thought about getting some of the audio from our last question about the Warriors, where we were really down on them, where we doubted them last series. We had all but counted them out.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying that to save face. We counted them out. We said they were done.
Well, I remember that conversation as me just saying how much I am coming to dislike Steph Curry. But those other guys off the bench were playing amazing.
I know. Yeah, it's getting a 54. So I think it's just people want to believe that the Cavs might win. But we'll see. In the celebrities category, we talked about this earlier at a concert in Verona, Italy. Adele stopped a performance to tell a fan to stop recording it on her phone. Are you with her on this, or do you think it was unnecessary?
Yeah, I'm not with Adele on this. No, I'm not with Adele at all on this. So if I had 100, I'm with Adele. Yeah, you shut that person down, yay. Or,
right.
Hey, leave the fan alone. I'm like 25. I say leave the fan alone. Just sing your song. We paid our money. Do your thing. We'll do ours.
I was, like we talked about, I was kind of torn, so I went like 45. Bob, what did you think?
You know, Adele has people, right? All she has to do is get word to her people, get that camera guy. Why ruin the show? You know, if you want to have that policy, that's fine. And a lot of artists I really like, you know, I'm a huge fan of the band King Crimson. They don't tour often. You can't take any kind of photo. They'll actually, there have been times where they will stop the concert and leave because people's photos
really?
Are distracted.
I just don't, in this day and age, everybody's
and
got
so,
a phone with a camera.
Yeah, and
you
there
can't
was
be that way anymore.
10 years ago, Keith Jarrett, the jazz pianist, just went on a tirade at the Umbria Jazz Festival in Italy. They almost never asked him back, but he's Keith Jarrett, so they did ask him back. But, you know, it's in that case, I talked to other musicians I know. They said, you know, if that's your policy, that's fine, but don't you shouldn't be the enforcer. You, as the musician, you get the people who work for you to enforce it. I'm not coming out until they play, Mr. Umbria staff, go get that to stop until I play or something. But to lose it on stage like that, I think it ruins it. for everybody else, and that's not what it's not. Everybody else's fault the guy's taking pictures.
Most of the people on the app went high. Everybody was with Adele, it seemed like. So it ended up at about a 76.
One of my producer's daughter is into Broadway shows. A lot of us are. But, I mean, she's in theater, and she goes to shows. So she's in New York, and she can't get into – she has not seen Hamilton. But Susan told me she's watched Hamilton a bunch on the Internet from pirate videos people make in the audience. And, okay, you shouldn't be doing that. But even then, I don't know that that keeps people from buying a ticket, right? Like, that's theft. You shouldn't do that. That's bad for
them. Haven't you heard that Hamilton sales are down? No one's going to see that show anymore. Now that there's some, you know, crappy cell phone video, everybody's like, forget it. I'm not spending the money on it.
That's why I'm thinking, Adele, I'm not, like, I know you've got to protect your music and your copyright and all that, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think this crappy video somebody's making up there, it's badly mic'd. I mean, if nothing else, the singing quality won't be good at whatever they're doing. So I'm not sure this hurts you. I'm not sure this harms you in any way.
No, yeah, well, you know, we can move on. But I'll just say...
No, I'm not done. I'm not done on the Adele thing.
I do think the way people consume concerts has changed, but I think it is a bummer because it's just lame to stand there. Come on, put it down. That's why I'm torn. I think everybody should just cool it. Stop taking the video. Don't address it. Whatever.
Yeah, right.
So in the viral category, I don't know if you saw a video of a 12-year-old named Marco Arturo taking on anti-vaxxers that kind of made news this week. He did like a little research, quote-unquote, research progress and project.
Yeah.
And then reported his findings, but it was more just a takedown of anti-vaxxing.
Oh, I did. I heard the video of that. Uh-huh. I actually wasn't watching it. It was pretty cool, wasn't it?
Well, I don't think
so. You didn't think so?
I'm with him I'm with him on his side of the debate, but I did not like the video. I gave it a low score.
Fair enough. All right. Anything else for us on that, Griff?
That got a 52. And the last thing is in the movies category. Rumor has it that Daniel Day-Lewis and Paul Thomas Anderson will reteam for an upcoming drama about the world of 1950s fashion. And if you don't remember, Daniel Day-Lewis starred in There Will Be Blood. That's the last time they worked together and won Best Actor for that movie in 2007. So did you like There Will Be Blood?
And when you also put it that way, yeah.
Are you excited for this news?
Totally I am. I don't want to see a movie about 50s fashion, but I didn't want to see Brokeback Mountain either when you described it to me. And then I thought, oh, that was a really good movie. Those two teaming up for a movie, I think that's awesome because they were great last time. So I'm pretty jazzed about this one.
Bob?
I didn't see There Will Be Blood, so I can't really say.
Oh,
I like Paul Thomas Anderson movies.
You've got to go see that.
If you got
on that one.
Three and a half hours free, you can...
This is, what's the line? It's like, this is a milkshake and I drink it up. Remember that scene towards the end there, Griff? Oh, it's so much good stuff in that movie.
I drink your milkshake.
I drink it up.
I drink it
up. By the way, I'm also recommending the movie The Lobster. I have not seen it yet, but it's the best movie I haven't seen in a long time. You know how when you watch videos online and you get the pre-roll and it's you can usually click out of an ad after 5 seconds? I went ahead and watched the whole thing. I could have clicked out at any time, but I watched the trailer for The Lobster, and I just thought it looked hilarious, awesome. You know, it's saying something, but it's ridiculous. I won't describe it anymore.
I didn't put it on the app because I figured nobody had seen it, and I think I'm right about that, but I saw it.
Its first week sales were less than $2 million.
Yeah,
you saw the movie. You saw the whole movie?
I saw the whole movie, believe me.
You understand? I thought maybe you just saw the trailer. And what was it? Was it a good movie?
Yeah, very good.
No, not as much as I'm enthusing about it.
I liked it a lot. I would be wary of sending people to go see it as you are doing, having not seen it, because it is kind of a super downer.
Is it?
Well, yeah, it's kind of the premise, if people don't know, is it's in some weird future sort of fantasy science fiction maybe world where if you are unmarried, they'll send you to a hotel. You have to get married in 45 days or you will be turned into an animal. And you get to choose what animal you'll be. So Colin Farrell, the star of the movie, wants to be a lobster if he doesn't get married in these 45 days. And
by the way, just stop right there. If that happens, you should not want to be something that's delicious. You know, I mean, really, why a lobster? But whatever.
Well, they say in the movie that the most common choice is dog, and they're always excited to get something that's not a dog. But anyway, it's really good. I liked it a lot. It's fascinating, but it's kind of depressing, and you might not, you know, feel great afterwards. But I do recommend people see it, I guess.
Rachel Weisz and John C. Reilly are in it too, right? Am I thinking about the right cast members one?
Yeah,
it sure looked like fun to me. I didn't know it was a downer. I just thought it was so preposterous and funny and spoke about love and how you've got to find love and some people want to be loners and so on and so forth. All right, that's our Vibe Score segment. Thank you, Griffin. You can download the Vibe Score app. It's free. V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E, Vibe Score. You can play along, type in your comments, too, on some of these topics. And I need to start sharing some individuals' names, scores, and comments, too. Let's make a note to do that. We'll catch up with the boys from The Beat next on WGN. Mark Carmen and Kevin Powell are getting ready for The Beat. What are you guys going to start off with today?
We're going to start off with what you're talking about, John, as far as the greatest of all time passing away, 74 years old, young, however you want to call it, Muhammad Ali. Yeah. And Kevin Powell's got he wants to talk to you about Adele.
The Adele thing, John, that you've been talking about all day, I'm with you.
All right.
I don't know
thank God. You've got to call in on the show more often. I needed you today.
I should text in. I don't understand why she's upset that someone is, in the year 2016, is probably putting that on social media, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, all of that. And she's going to call him out and embarrass him like that in front of the entire stadium of her fans. I don't get it. I don't know why she was upset that someone's filming her performance. That's what people do now. I mean, I see her angle and I see her side of things where, you know, just sort of absorb the moment. You don't always have to be on your phone and technology, but I don't really see why she had to single one fan out like that.
Yeah, I don't like that about all of us, but all of us do it. And I'm like, you're on a stage, just look out into this crowd, sing your songs. And the funny thing is everybody's like, yeah, that person's an idiot. They're all videotaping this on their phones.
Right. And I don't know if you touch on it, but why did she choose this person? Because there had to have been, you know, at least 50% of the crowd had probably had their phone out, and she chose this guy?
I think the reason was, I didn't see it, but I'm pretty sure this person had their phone on a tripod.
Oh, okay.
So now it's looking a little more professional grade, you know?
The tripod maybe is a bit much to bring to a concert.
So don't do that, and then we'll defend you, because that's the only weakness in my argument.
You know, we could bring this into a Cubs realm, too, here, by the way, because the Cubs are trying to get rid of the street newspaper people outside the ballpark, go across the street, because they want all the dough. It sounds like Adele wants all the dough, John.
Yeah, well, maybe so. I'm still not sure that hurts her that much. But, Mark, I'm not sure what that story is. What are you talking about there?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with there's been guys that have been out there that have been selling, you know, a little program for years, 10-plus years now. And there's a city ordinance now where you cannot be on the property of Wrigley Field and selling. A vendor can't do that, including the Cubs, by the way. But I'm sure the Cubs will work that out at some point. So your Dollar Cubs program, which is more expensive in the ballpark, they now have to move across the street. So, you know, I don't know what those dudes make in a day, but it can't be that much. And the Cubs want it all, which I guess I get, but it's kind of –
I wonder if they're going to go after the guy that sells the bag of peanuts when you get off the L.
They are.
Because you think about that. That's not their property, but you can bring that big bag of peanuts in and water for a lot less than you'd pay at the park.
Right. That guy's included in it, too. But the newspaper guy is suing or did sue and lost.
Oh.
So.
Well, maybe Adele will write another sad song about all of this.
All right, fellas.
Hey, wait, before you go, John, you're 10 seconds or whatever time you want to give to speaking on Muhammad Ali, what he meant to you.
That it's important to stick to your guns. You know, like history now remembers that he was right, say, on the Vietnam War, or we appreciate how principled he was about it. And history, I think at first when he decided he was going to convert to Islam, you thought, what? What is that? Or, you know, what's all of this about? And I think in time we realized that Muhammad Ali was very thoughtful and smart, and, you know, he never wavered. He stuck to his beliefs to the very end. And he wasn't always hostile or angry about it either. Don't you love your memory of Muhammad Ali and who he was as a person?
I mean, I think he's the most riveting sports icon of the 20th century, and I really don't think there's anyone close.
You guys are going to have a good show. Lots to talk about. Yeah. Mark Harmon and Kevin Powell and Adele music will be featured on The Beat. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John.
They're up next on WGN.